Welcome to another episode of the Lisa Ann Experience with me, Lisa Ann, ready to spend some time with you. And I mean some good, really good, intimate, awesome time. Today is all about kind of my past, right? I've been having these profound thoughts about how the creatures that I was intimate with in my past life are so connected to me in so many ways, and I adore and love them, down to the fact that there was a girl I met when I was 18 years old at Al's Diamond Cabaret. You all know her, Christy Canyon, the one and only. Her and I had been keeping in good touch during the shutdown, and she wasn't able to do her radio show on Vivid Radio on Sirius XM. And so, as I always troll the XBiz and all the industry newspapers in the morning, I saw the ad that her show was coming back on. I reached out to her and we spent an hour on air just reminiscing. And with Christy, the reminiscing is very different because she remembers porn before Gonzo. And what I mean by that, let me explain. Gonzo is just a scene. Maybe the girl comes over, there's a little teasing, maybe a guy knocks at the door and delivers a pizza, but the dialogue is like less than 4 minutes. And what Christy remembers is 4 days of dialogue and then a day where you have your sex scene. So in my quest to work smart and not hard, when Gonzo came about, I was like, oh my, this is amazing. My 4 day workday is now a 4 hour workday. And here we are. And one of the performers that I worked with the most when I was being introduced to Gonzo was the one and only my guest that I have here with you today on the Lisa Ann Experience. You know him as Eric Everhart. And today you're going to find out how he became Eric Everhart. We will also be discussing his new book. And I am so excited that he finally wrote a book. The book is Unleash Your Sexual Superpowers, A Porn Star's Guide to Sexual Mastery. And trust me, Eric Everhart has mastered everything sexual. Eric, hello.
Hey, it's great to see you.
It is great to see you too. It's been since summer of 2018 where I was fortunate enough to visit Prague in between my Italy dance tour, and we got to spend a little time together.
And we had an excellent meal too.
Meal was just bringing out food, and we had an excellent meal thanks to you because you hooked that up. So, Eric, let's kind of like go in reverse right here. Let's first talk about the hot topic right now. I saw your book. See, I still troll XBiz and all the industry newspapers because now that I'm not as involved, it's actually really fun. I feel like an outsider kind of like looking in. And I see your book, and that same day I reached out to you right away and I was super pumped. Thank you for sending me the PDF that I was able to really go through and get the ideas and concepts. How long did it take you to put together this book, and what inspired you to write this book?
Okay, well, let's start with one piece at a time then. I mean, the genesis for the book really started probably around 2014.
Okay.
I would say that was when the idea, you know, the seed was planted in my head. And it's really actually kind of funny because I wasn't sure what I was going to do. It's like I had this vision and I started putting together all these notes. So I had a pile of notes, right? You know, just a pile of notes of all these things. And, you know, I didn't know, was this going to be courses? Was it a book? I felt compelled to get the information out.
Okay.
So I did that. And then when I left the U.S., one of the few things that I brought with me was that pile of notes. And I didn't even know why at the time. Yeah. Because I came with one suitcase, right? And in that suitcase, I was like, I probably need these notes at some point. So that was one of the few things I brought with me.
So in 2014, the dating apps weren't really as established as they are now. And you talk a bit about how your girlfriends, your civilian friends, as we call them, would talk to you about how lame the sex was with the guys that they met on dating apps, which we all hear this, right? But as a woman, we talk about it amongst each other. Giving that information to a guy, and a guy with your sexual experience, your sexual prowess, actually could go somewhere. And now here it goes, where you can advise.
Well, and that was the thing, right? It's, you know, I had a couple girls and they really hammered home that seed in my brain, because they're like, look, I don't know what you're doing, but you're doing something really good. You need to you need to tell some guys about this shit you're doing. And I was like, really? And they're like, oh yeah, it's really bad out there. You know, they would give me all their stories, right? About just, you know, how bad it was out there in the, you know, quote unquote civilian world. So that was, you know, that was the genesis for the idea. And then the actual writing part, that started in 2017. So the whole process now has been 3 years, you know, start to finish, basically. And I mean, you're an author yourself, so you know the process, right? Yeah. It's like, you know, so we can bond around this one now.
Yeah.
Because I've had so many people, they say, oh, yeah, I want to write a book. I would blah, 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 right? And I'm like, you know how you do it? Sit down and fucking write.
Yeah.
Like every morning. Every morning. It was like a day job. I woke up. I'm like, get my coffee. I'm like, okay, let's sit down.
It's The Power of Habit, which is a great book that I read. And they interviewed an author. And he said 5 days a week for 2 hours a day, he writes. Sets his timer. Then he takes 2 hours in the afternoon and edits. Because you still go back and read things that you don't like, or you want to try and figure, did this land right in this chapter, or should this be over here? And it's a lot of editing and a lot of rereading, and then reminding yourself, don't write more while you're editing, because then you just add to the pile of papers that you already have.
Yeah. Well, for me, actually, once I got the entire book done, because I've rewritten it 3 times.
Mm.
And, you know, the biggest takeaway that I got was, don't fall in love with your stuff.
Oh, right? Yeah.
Because,
and also, don't fight to be a perfectionist, because you'll never put the book out. Most people will never let it go. They continue to try and perfect it and perfect it. You have to accept your work and move on.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. But from the first iteration to the second iteration, that was probably the most powerful, because I remember giving it to my book publisher, and he was like, eh. He goes, well, you know, because I was so happy I was done. I was like, this is great.
Yeah,
right? And he's like,
I know that.
He's like, oh, it's pretty good, but it could use, you know, blah, 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 right? And I was like, oh, man. So I shelved it, which was the best thing I could recommend to anybody.
Walk away. Time. Yep.
So I was gone from it, I would say, between 6 and 8 months.
That's a good time.
I picked it up. And then, you know, then I had fresh eyes. So then I start reading this, and I'm like, oh, like
this
I didn't explain that good enough. I'm like, oh yeah, this is
trash.
What a hack wrote this stuff? God. So that was really good. So then I went through and I rewrote start to finish every chapter. Right.
But you had that outline kind of there of your concept, right? But then you realize, like, a lot of the things that you and I do that we've done for years, we speak in our lingo. And when a other person reads it, they're like, what does this mean? You know, what does this mean? How can you elaborate on this more so the average person can understand it? One of the things I loved is you talk about men, and you said, don't be a backseat passenger in your sexual experiences. And the reason I'm bringing this up is because you've lived both lives. You have sex on set with porn stars. So I would say more on the professional, you'd think they'd be so much better. You also have sex with civilians. Mm-hmm. And you've realized that you are driving that car and you're not willing to be that backseat passenger. And I know from, you know, exploring sexually, especially not on set, there's somewhat of a fear, a laziness, and not sure what to do, which I don't understand, because these are the same guys that have watched hundreds of hours of porn, but they don't have the concept of how to put the two things together when they actually get time to be intimate with a woman.
Yeah. And that's one of the things, I'm sure you saw it in the book where I talk about, like, for some reason, I don't know why it is, but men think that the woman's just going to go all basic instinct on them and do all this crazy stuff, right? And it's like, no, most women, you know, especially if they're really in their femininity, like, they want you to take control.
Yes.
Like, they just want to lay back, submit, have a good time, but they want you to create it. You know, they
yes.
want you to create the magic. And, you know, and they sit there like thinking, oh, this girl's going to do all this crazy stuff, and she's looking at them like, are you going to move your ass and do something here? Right. Like,
and how do you feel this has changed with men being a little bit more intimidated by sexual interactions? Right. I mean, we had so many different movements over the past couple of years. And some of my male friends have come to me and said, like, what kind of conversation should I be having with a new partner before a safe word, some sort of signal if she's not comfortable with something? How far can I lead? And I tell them, like, have a decent conversation, but push the envelope and let her know if she doesn't like something, she can say no. Because if you're lame, she's just moving on to find somebody more exciting because she does want you to lead.
Well, yeah, because this has come up a couple times with some clients of mine. And, you know, it's a delicate subject, especially in America. But I will tell them, I'm like, look, be bold, right? Pay attention to the signals that the woman is giving back. Because I said, you know, most consent is never explicit. It's almost always, in sexual terms, it's implicit. And that's what keeps it exciting. So it's like, you know, if you're like, okay, well, I put my hand on the girl's thigh. If she doesn't like it there, she's gonna fucking smack it off you. Oh yeah.
I mean, it's like, move it. What do we do?
It's what you do, right? If you let it stay there, it's like you're thinking, you know, it's the implicit consent of, yeah, that's okay. And then you're like, okay, right?
And listening is so important too, right? Because you can feel someone's breathing changing. You can feel their body start to relax. When you're really getting into that level of intimacy with somebody for the first time, this is not the time to have music blaring or Sports Center blaring, whatever you choose, whatever your preference. I go back and forth with both. But you want to be listening and you want to be communicating. And I think breathing has been such an easy way for me to get to know the guys that I'm with and what they love and what they don't love.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, you know, it seems common sense, but I think in a big way in today's society, people, they want this because they're so afraid, they want this explicit consent. Mm-hmm. And the only problem with that is true explicit consent, because I know one guy out there that was, he was championing this consent form before sex. So you and me were going to go on a date, Lisa. And I, before we even go on the date, I break out the form saying, well, if ABC, right? I want your signature. And I was like, are you fucking kidding me?
You can't do that, man. Just talk about killing the moment.
If you want to make a pussy dry up any faster, pull out the consent form.
My statement that I say when a date is not going well or something's not happening, I always say that my knees are welding together. Like, I can feel my knees just welding together. That's the visual. I don't know why, but Eric, that is the visual I go to when I'm talking to a dude and I just feel him, and I'll text a friend and go, the knees are welding together. It's happening right now. Okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, so it is interesting just how society has gone. Because on one side of the equation, you have, well, you know, we want more consent. We want more this. We want more that. Everybody's saying that. But then when you look at sexual interactions and what people's bodies respond to, totally different.
Totally different. Now, you were born and raised in Canada. Then you moved to the U.S. Then in 2014, you went to Prague. And your experiences of your living in different places, Where do you feel you've lived the most sexually free life? Because I think in America, we have some really weird kind of hangups on sex, though we gravitate towards porn as kind of our guide. But yet I think people here are more intimidated. I don't know if you know this, but teens and the Gen Xers are having less sex than any generation so far in the United States.
Which actually seems very strange, because what's interesting, at least when I look at the different countries that I've lived in, I would say of all the places I've lived, probably the greatest quote unquote hookup culture is the US. So really? The US to me has for young people that are just like, you know, like very casual sex hookup culture, I would say the US. So what I surmise is happening is Pareto's principle is just now on overdrive. So where you talk about a lot of people will say, And I'm actually going to quote, it was a lecture that I watched from Jordan Peterson. And he even said, you know, look, you've got 20% of the guys sleeping with 80% of the women. Because statistically, almost every woman will have a child. Statistically, like almost every woman gets pregnant, has a child at one point, right? So that means every woman out there has been laid. You have so many guys that die virgins.
They all email me, by the way. They all email me. Okay. But, they but all want me to take their virginity.
So here you have, you know, Pareto's principle, where it's like, well, you've got a smaller section of guys that are sleeping with the majority of the women, and then you have this big pool of guys where they're, you know, it's slim pickings, so to speak.
And just like everything else, practice makes perfect. I mean, it's not just in sports or in other things. In sex, practice makes perfect as well. So when you went, and I love the introduction to your book, I love the story of your first, you know, getting to go and meet people to get away from, you were going to massage school at the time, mm-hmm. and you knew, what made you know that you could perform in front of a camera? What made you know that you would be such a strong performer? Or were you still on the fence about that when you went to meet with them about shooting a scene?
No, well, there was a bunch of different things that occurred there. So number one, when I went to that very first, you know, quote unquote porno shoot, yeah. I had no idea I was shooting, because when I got the owner on the phone, he said, come on by and we'll take some Polaroids of you, right? and see if maybe we could get you a job one day. Right. And I'm thinking like, well, fuck, right. Hey, Polaroids is better than nothing. Right.
Right. Let's go.
So, you know, I knock on the door. And, you know, he looks at me, he's like, are you Mitch? I'm like, yeah. And he just looked me straight in the eye and said, can you fuck a girl for us right now? And I was just, you know, it's just like, my jaw just dropped open. I was like, you know, it's like, imagine, you know, me at 21, right? Like just trying to just get it out of my mouth. Like, yeah, you know, it's just like barely squeaking it out. So there was a couple things that were interesting with that. First, I didn't have a lot of time to think about it.
Of course not. Right.
And you know what's actually sort of hysterical, but very true? The thought that I wouldn't be able to do it never went through my mind. Like, there was no part of me that was like, I'm not going to be able to do this. Yeah. Right, like, right. Even when I was waiting, like, I was having lots of other thoughts, right? Like, I mean, you know, what do they need me to do? I can't
right.
believe this
How
is
do
happening.
I open to the camera? Like, what do yeah, I
like,
do?
Like, oh, this is all so crazy, right? But there was no thought in there saying, geez, I hope I get it up.
So you never doubted yourself?
It just never even occurred That's to fantastic. Me. Like, it wasn't part of my psyche that said that this would be a problem, right? So, you know, so I go in there, I do it, you know, the girl's cute. You know, she's probably, I don't know, maybe like say 3 years older than me, probably. I mean, she was a stripper from Vancouver. So, and then I remember, you know, like literally, and you'll laugh at this because, you know, they came in and they said, well, you know, and they were very quiet about it. Like, well, you know, anytime in the next 10 minutes, if you could make a cum shot, like 10 minutes, right? Like, you know, and now, you know, you're understanding pro, they're like, Hey, let's move it, buddy. You got yeah. 1 minute, right? Yeah. And they're like
you got the camera. Wait, you already have the camera that's like, listen, I got like 60 seconds left on my battery and I don't want to change it. Can you pop within that 50 seconds? Like, whenever a guy would say that to male talent I was working with, I was like, just change the fucking battery. Like, how can you put a 60 second timeline on this guy? But so they gave you a 10 minute window, but that was probably the first time you ever had a guy walk up to you and say, hey, can you come in 10 minutes?
Yeah, yeah. But I was like, I mean, I was just like, I was just thinking, well, sure. And then it was just like, you know, like, it's like 30 seconds later, I was like, done. Literally, though, Lisa, I thought nothing of it. They handed me a little bit of cash. I was like, cool. Because to me, it was just collecting a story.
Okay.
That there was no part of my brain that said, hey, this is going to be a career, nothing.
Really? Still
no, 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 no. Oh, no, no, no. That I just thought it'd be something cool. Like, I was thinking in my head, right? Like, when I'm 85 years old, in Depends, at the old folks home, right? And we're sitting around, you know, playing poker, I want to have the coolest story. And I was like, hey, you know, if I say like I did a porno once, like there's a fucking cool story, right? So that was really the only thing. And because I wasn't expecting any money. They gave me some cash. It wasn't a lot of cash, but it was more than I was making. Because
still,
at the time,
you were
was
walking over there for Polaroids to get photos taken. You walked out the door laid and with some cash, okay?
Yeah.
You didn't fuck a stranger, which is exactly always exciting in a safe place, right? So like it was a win. But your mindset when you walked out that door, tell me where this came from, the, oh, okay, I got a cool story, to I'm going to be a top performer in the industry, which I don't think you even set out to do. I just think it organically happened for you. Cause like I said, yeah, your favorite coworker, I mean, yeah.
Yeah, no, it was all organic. So what happened was, this was about 3 days later. I was at my house, you know, studying or doing something. And I get a call, you know, it's like, well, who's this? Right. I answer it. And it's those guys, right? It's the porno guys. And they're like, hey, can you come by and do that again? Right. And I was like, okay.
So right? Cavalier.
Yeah. And well, cause it was actually funny. Like later on, I found out, I started to get more details as I became friends with the editor there. And, then I found out quickly I was the only guy who had come by that was able to do it. So they had the owner.
The owner
did all the scenes. Yeah. And not, I mean, I'm sure he liked doing the scenes, but he did them because they couldn't find anybody either.
Sure. There wasn't a huge community in Vancouver either. Am I correct?
Oh, yeah. No. It wasn't.
Really underground porn community in Canada in general.
Mm-hmm. And you have to look at the time period too, right? It's like, you know, this was end of the late 90s, you know, like there was none of the crazy fucking drugs these kids are taking these days, right? Like right. It was just like, hey, either you like girls or you don't, you know,
right.
Either you can block out all the crazy stuff that you're listening to, seeing the thoughts in your head, you can either block that out or you can't. And it was very cut and dry.
And when you say crazy drugs, let me explain to our listeners, we're talking about what I call PEDs in porn. You don't know how many sets, Eric, I had been on when the MILF phenomenon happened, and they wanted me to work with these young new guys because they thought it fit so well. And they're like shoving pills down his throat to get his dick hard. And the guy's turning like beet red. He looks like he's going to have a heart attack during the scene. I'm thinking I'm going to have to resuscitate this guy. Miami would give these black pills from Cuba. And the guys would literally tell me that they were hard for like 5 days after they took it the last time. They're like, oh my God, I'm going to be hard for 5 days. I'm like, you shouldn't take black market Viagra. You can go to a doctor and get it. But you didn't have that. You just naturally crushed it. And you carry on your career. And how do you get to the U.S. to become professional at this? When was the decision that this is more than a story?
Okay, that occurred with my friend at the time. So I was working at a local hardcore gym.
Okay.
And I used to work there, sell memberships, cook the members food, all that kind of stuff. And, you know, it was a super meathead gym. So everybody was either a cop, a bodybuilder, a power lifter, or a drug dealer, right?
Okay. Or a stripper. You had to have the occasional stripper up in that gym.
We did.
Okay. Because we loved going to those gyms because those guys never fucked with us. They were never creepers. They were always just like, you want me to kill somebody for you? I'm like, yes, I have like 10 people.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I remember when we actually had a fight in the gym. that was entertaining. So it was that kind of gym. And I had a friend who I'd become friends with, and he was the resident steroid dealer of the gym.
Okay.
And his name was Jeff.
Okay.
He was 5'4" and like 4 feet wide, right? And
his neck is like a tree trunk, right? Big.
Oh
neck.
Man, he was iconic. He was the best businessman. Like he was the first person that really taught me about business. He was sharp as a tack, and he would come in late at night, drive his fancy Corvette because he drove a black Corvette. Right. He had a flashy watch. He usually would wear all black and then he'd just sit at the back of the little dining area and, have meetings with the clients. And we became friends, you know, because I was always working there at night. And so he was one of the first people that found out after I had done the scene, right?
Because so he was connected with Vancouver. He had the pulse on all the things going on in the city.
It wasn't that, but you know, I told him, I was like, hey, guess what, Jeff, you know, I did this, and I showed him the tape, and it was like, he was like, we gotta explore this, man. Right. I was like, okay, right, because I didn't really know too much about it, and so he was like, okay, we need to find more information, right? Because he was like business guy. So it so happened that we used to have, I can't remember the name of the video store, but there was a pretty famous Canadian adult bookstore, like chain. And often, maybe even you signed there. I can't remember the name of it. But they would have girls, you know, coming from LA, and it was a chain all across Canada.
Yeah.
Girls would come, you know, do a big signing. And it just so happened that Diana Loren was coming to sign in Vancouver.
Okay.
So Jeff is like, oh, look at this. We got to go. Right?
Got to go meet Diana Loren. Yeah.
Yeah. And at that point, I had two videos that had come out, you know, that this little Canadian company was trying to distribute, right?
And so when you say videos, they were still on VHS then, correct? Yes.
These were two VHS boxes, right? But you could see me, right, on the back of the box. You could see it was me. You could see my face, that, right? You could see my dick.
Did they use your real name, or did you already pick a stage name?
I don't think I had the name there. Jeff actually was the one that came up with my stage name.
Okay. Thank you, Jeff.
Yeah. Right. Oh, no. And we were all sitting around at the gym, and, you know, it was like, oh, okay, you got to come up with a name.
Yeah.
Right. And it took Jeff literally like 10 seconds. Cause he was like, you know, you need to have alliteration, like, you know, Jenna Jameson, Vince Boyer, blah, blah, blah. And then he just blurted out, he goes, Eric Eberhard, because I saw your dick. It was always hard. He goes, Eric, because you know, you looked like you're Nordic. And he goes, you got to spell it with a K. And literally, like, you're talking about, it's me and a group of other, you know, dudes, super, you know, juiced up meatheads. And we're all just mouth open. Like, and we literally just turned to Jeff and we're like, Jeff, that's fucking genius. And that was it. Like, we were all just like, yep, that's it. Like, we don't need to even debate it. We're like,
No. There's no debating that. That was a perfect name for you. And so you go to meet Diana Loren.
Yeah. So we go and, you know, we get in line, right? And we get to the front and just super straight up. I was like, look, I'm sure every guy has been like, hey, how do I get into porno? I'm like, that's not me. So I put the two box covers down. I said,
good for you.
There's the box covers.
Collateral.
There's me. That's my dick. Talk to me. What do I got to know? And she was such a sweetheart. She probably spent 20 minutes with us. She was like, well, if you're good, you could work this many days a month. You could charge this much money.
And were you shocked at the amount of money she said you could charge versus the amount of money you were getting?
Oh, we were, both of us were just like, I had never heard of that much money in my life, right? I was I'm just like, you're fucking kidding me.
I'm cooking food at a fucking gym late night, okay?
Oh, yeah. I'm sitting here, you know, I'm lucky if I'm pulling $7 an hour, right? I'm like, you're going to pay me what?
To have sex with beautiful women? Yeah. Okay.
So, yeah. And so we finished up the meeting and we walked outside and literally the door closed to the adult video store. And Jeff turns to me and he's like, he says, hey, he goes, I have a gut feeling. He goes, and my gut's never been wrong. He goes, I think you can be big at this. He goes, so if you want, I'll back you financially to get down to LA.
I love Jeff.
Yeah. So
do you still talk with him?
He passed away years ago.
Oh, rest in peace, Jeff. Yeah. You made a huge difference in my friend's life. Like,
Yeah.
And I also love the fact that he was so open-minded, right? I mean, not every guy can have a conversation with another man who is well-versed in business, who sees this as a business opportunity, who isn't creepy, who isn't weird, and really just straightforward, the name, this is what you should be doing. Fascinating. Jeff really had an impact in your movement.
Oh, huge, 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 huge. One of the most impactful people of my entire life was Jeff. So then, I thought about it. And I think it was 2 weeks later, I dropped out of school. I was like, okay, we're going for this.
And you went to California on your own. Did you have any contacts? Did you stay in touch with Diana Loren?
So what happened was she gave me three numbers. Now, only one of those kind of panned out because one was Jim South.
Right? Okay.
Rest in peace, because I heard he just passed away.
I know, just passed away.
But that was one of the numbers. And so then what I ended up doing, because I was friends with the editor that shot and edited all the stuff for the Canadian company, he had his genius idea. He was like, well, you know, because we had different footage, right? So he's like, hey, well, get me some footage of you just doing whatever you do in your spare time, right? So
he's going to make you a reel.
He made me a reel. I still, you know, somewhere in my storage.
We got to get that reel. We got to get that reel. I mean, that is gold, Eric. That is gold. Oh my God. I bet you it's so cute because you are working out, because you've always been a fitness enthusiast. You've always taken great care of yourself. You've always lived really healthy. You've never really been a crazy partier. You've never, you know, you've always been right here. That is, you know, you knew some nice people. You're very lucky.
Oh, yeah. I was really lucky. So what we did is because, you know, we were gym junkies, right? And I had access to the gym. So we just cut it. Like, it's all this footage of us working out, right? Like, it's just, we got all this workout footage. And then in between the workout footage, right?
Suddenly, yeah,
banging girls, right? And then, so it was like, he put some good music to it. It was really good, right? And then, at the end of that, of the reel, you know, it was like 5 minutes. And then it just had my name, Eric Everhard, and it had the phone number, right?
Yeah.
Phone number to my pager, of all things. And just where I was located. And that was it. And so what we did was we duplicated a whole bunch of them and got an old AVN magazine. And I just looked at all the addresses in the back. And, you know, we just sent tapes, right? And I sent probably, let's say, 20 to 30 tapes, and I got three people that came that
responded. Yep. You and I did the same thing. So when I was living in Pennsylvania and dancing, I was lucky enough to meet lovely women like Diana Loren and Lena and Terry Weigel, and they all helped me gather the addresses. I used the AVN as well, which back then was like a phone book every month. Oh, yeah. It was like this big.
Huge.
Wrote to Hustler, and I would have a photographer take photos of me, mail them out to California, wait to potentially hear back, then do more photos, then mail them out. That process took me about 2 years.
Oh yeah. It you know, now it's like life is just instantaneous.
Internet,
right?
But yeah.
Yeah. But back then that was how I did it. So I had, you know, three people contact me. It was Seymour Butts. He
loves,
he got,
Seymour.
He wanted me, like, he thought I was in LA, right? Okay. So he's like, oh, well, I got a scene for you, right? I'm like, oh, great. Well, just tell me, I can fly down there. He's like, oh, no. He's like, I thought you were here. Then Luke Wilder from Fallen Angel.
Yeah, remember Luke Wilder.
Yeah, and then Jules Jordan from Philadelphia.
Okay.
And so he was the one. Because, you know, he had nobody that that he could shoot out there. You know, he was
right.
Very small time at the time. And he was like, okay. And I told him, I was like, look, I don't need to make any money. I just need my flight covered. So I was like, I'll go for free, right? But
because you really wanted the experience. You wanted to see if it was going to be different in the States, how the content was shot different. How many scenes? I saw in your book, you said you think you've had sex with about 4,000 women, give or take 500, which is funny because I always tell people I've had sex with 3,000 to 5,000 people, give or take 2,000. Because there was an experimental time with a lot of ecstasy and a lot of group sex in the 90s that was kind of a blur. And there could have been chunks of those trips where the numbers really got skewed. So I can't be as accurate as you. How many scenes do you think you've done? Because you're still shooting. You're shooting now in Prague. You're also producing and directing. If you had to put a total on it, because it's always more for the guys because you work more regularly than the girls, because we're out featured dancing and doing store appearances. You guys are working like 5 days a week. Thousands.
Yeah,
I'd have to say 2,500 to 3,000 at least.
Yeah, yeah, at least.
Yeah, because some of the women are definitely what I like to call repeat offenders, girls you work with regularly because they love you.
Because I remember my first year in the business, I wrote like everything down. I had, you know, one of those old, you know, of course we're talking pre-iPhone, right? So I had one of those day timers, right?
And like,
I had
all the months. Work with this girl.
Oh yeah. So I knew everybody that I'd worked with and I knew the companies, like I had it all done for like 1 year, right? And then the 101 happened.
101. You know?
Vivid had me do, last one. It was the world's luckiest jock. So it was me and 101 girls. And you want to talk about like that ecstasy style blur you're talking about? That was the 101, right? I'm like, I'm fucking all these girls. I'm like, I have no idea. Like literally it's like pussies, buttholes, and I don't even know faces, right? Like it's just,
how long were you in the business before they put you up to such a challenge?
It was like a year and something because I did that. I think I did that, or maybe it was a year and a half. I did that in like 2000.
So in 2000, you do the 101, which was a reverse, would you call it a reverse gangbang, right? At that point, how many hours did you have to shoot that day? Was it done in one day?
No, we shot that over 4 days and it was probably... I think it was probably like 13 hours a day.
Holy shit.
Because I remember when it was finally done. Oh, and this was better. People don't even understand. Like, that's when Vivid was all condoms still.
Oh, that's right.
I had a different condom for every girl.
Oh, my God. Every group, you must have went through hundreds because sometimes you put one on, take it back off. You got to put it back on. You got to get a different one. Like, oh, my God.
Oh, well, I had my own condom PA. They had a guy on set. His whole job
yes.
was opening and like, you know, just tear it open. It's ready, right? Because I was just, I mean.
You can't. There's so much lube on your hands at that point, babe. Oh. There's no way you can touch anything without it falling to the ground. Once it falls to the ground, you're not picking it back up. It's disgusting. You had a condom. Okay, this is, there's got to be a quote on an Instagram post somewhere. I had a condom PA once. I mean, that might be the story when you're in the pens that overrides all the rest of the stories because the world knows she was a famous porn star. But have you ever had your own personal assistant that just hands you condoms? Probably not.
Oh, yeah, it's ridiculous. But it was true. There was a guy and his whole job was, you know, hand him the condoms, keep them coming, right? Yeah, when the whole thing was done, I remember there was like a layer of skin that was just gone from my dick because not just from all the fucking, but then, you know, condoms, they have their own special thing where they don't necessarily rub you the right way, right?
No.
And then, of course, every time you just get one feeling good, right? It's got that right amount of lube in the tip and you're like, oh yeah, this is good. It's like, next, it's off. You're like, new one on. And it's like, oh, fuck, this feels like shit again. Okay, here we go, right?
But after fucking 101 girls over a 5-day span for a movie that is just based around you, every other scene had to seem like a walk in a park.
Oh, well, yeah. But I would say there was probably other scenes that I would say were situations that were tougher than that. Like I remember... When I would do the original My Play things for New Sensations.
Yeah.
Those days. Oh, man. Because, you know, when they first did those, I was the only guy that they had do them because I was the only guy who could.
Right.
And they shot them in one day. And, you know, we'd be there 13, 15, I mean, like all day. And, I remember every time when it was done, like literally my dick hurt so bad. I was just like, you know, like, I'm like, this thing has been hard now, up, down, up, down, up, down for 15 hours. I'm like, I just want to come and just sleep. I want to go home. Right?
And eat because it's hard to really eat too much in between because you don't have that much time to digest your food and then feel really good. You know, those are the things that most people don't really consider when they're wondering how this is made. It's kind of like now, you know, VR is taking over and there's very few guys that can do VR you'd be one of those guys, but because you're so disconnected from the female performer, you're not able to touch or kiss or be connected. So it's really tough. And you're also bent in a direction that can somehow hurt your circulation, really affect you. And I see guys doing them, and I'm like, this just must be such a struggle. And it's a huge thing in the business right now. And again, it's only a handful of guys that can do it.
Yeah. When I look at VR and I look at my play thing, I mean, it was the exact same thing. It was the exact same thing. It's just, you know, now they're shooting it with the VR goggles or whatever, but same thing. You're totally disconnected. And also what made the play things so hard and what taught me so many lessons about lasting longer that I put into the book, because, you know, I was brand new when I started doing those, you know, and the owner, Scott, you know, because it was an interactive DVD and it was a, you know, one angle, and they needed, there was no cuts.
If you had to start over.
Exactly. They had a stopwatch on set and they're just watching. Right. And you had to make it to, I don't know if it was 5 minutes. I can't remember what it was, but I mean, they'd put me in this position and literally like 30 seconds in, I'm like, oh God. And I threw the girl off me, like fucking, right?
Tossed
her.
Because you can't come, you know what I mean?
Oh,
you
yeah. I'm like, get the fuck off me. I'm like, who? You know? But then, you know, it's like, if I tossed her off at 4 minutes, 30 seconds, and they need 5 minutes, they just look at you and they say, gotta start from zero.
Yeah. And that's not easy. Yeah. So with all these years, from the knocking on the door to potentially take some Polaroids to possibly explore an option that could have led to a great story, what are your favorite things about being in the industry and performing? Because you're still shooting. You're shooting regularly. Are you guys back to shooting in Prague?
Yeah. Everybody's here is working. I don't think that is going to
stop again. You have 24-hour COVID tests like we do in the U.S.?
This is only for one U.S. company that shoots here. Everybody else, they don't care about the COVID tests.
Okay.
You know, and you know, it's gone through probably enough of the porno population, and you know, everybody survived. Nobody's had any problems.
Right.
And so here they're very pragmatic about things. So, I mean, you still have, obviously, you know, propaganda, and you have, you know, some fear mongering, but generally speaking, most of the population here is like, hey, there's no dead bodies in the street. Okay. We're going to be fine.
You know, I read, when there was a huge dinner table set up down by Charles Bridge in Prague, and I read a beautiful article and watched the video, and it was so amazing. And that was how everyone was getting back together in the city after your shutdown. How amazing was that?
Yeah. So, you know, now the government here has imposed pseudo lockdown restrictions.
Okay.
But I think if they were to try and implement the full thing again here, people would just revolt, because, you know, the economy here isn't the same like certain economies in the U.S.
And sure.
And even U.S. economies. I mean, really, how often can somebody just sit at home? I mean, in the U.S., of course, they can just keep printing money. Here, you don't have that same luxury. These countries, you know, if they turn on the printing press, like seriously, it's going to be really bad news for these countries. So they know that, you know, it's like, well, how do we keep things open enough? But then they still are restricted.
And be careful. All right, back to the question. Your favorite thing about being in the industry after all these years?
Well, I mean, number one would have always been the sex. I mean, that's what I got into the business. You know, I didn't go in it chasing money, right?
Or fame.
No. Mm-hmm. Oh, I mean, to this day, I'm probably still one of the last people out there, like, quote unquote, promoting myself, right? I'm not that type of person. It's just not my personality. But for me, yeah, it was the sex. It was the fun. You know, it was always about fun. And I thought, well, if I'm having fun, then the money will follow.
Yeah,
and that was always the way I looked at it. So, you know, and it's just like now, you know, for me, coaching guys is fun. Like I love my clients, right? So So it's just another extension of that.
Sure. You're sharing your joy that you've already felt. Yeah. You know, that fun is such a big part of it. And the relationships that we build, like the relationship that I've built with you over the years and, you know, working with you so often, we've had experiences where there have been battles where I've fought for you just because people suck. And you recall me having this huge fight with Derek because I was so insistent I was working with you. And I was like, fuck that. I'm still working with them. And then he's like, I'm firing you. But we've also had some off-camera fun. I think it's something that people don't realize is in the business, you know, you just become close and trusted. And so for me, there was a time where I was trying to learn how to do anal.
I do recall.
And you were so gracious to come to my home and help work with me. You were also gracious on helping me pick out lingerie. Like I knew what you liked. I kind of knew what perfumes you liked then. And I just enjoyed our connection. And I think that's something that most people don't understand is once you've been with each other for 5 years, maybe 10 years, there's this like extended relationship that you have, which is why when I was in Europe in 2018, I wanted to see you because I still have this connection with you. It doesn't go away. There's like, we're like more than colleagues, if you know what I mean. Yeah. But I love the distant intimacy. I love that I felt that I still had this really kind of romantic involvement with the guys that I favored to work with. But yet there was none of that complicated connection that came with it.
Yeah. Like, and do you feel, I'm going to ask you a question now. Do you feel that that is sort of lost with today's younger generation?
I do. I really do. It's much more of a machine now. The talent is very separated now that so many people live in Vegas and everybody is kind of shooting. But I also think it's become a bit less sexual, right? It's become more of a business. And I think everybody is in such a bout of a hurry because maybe if they're on set, instead of spending time interacting with their male star, they're off shooting something for their social media or they're doing something for their OnlyFans. Like everybody's in their own world, whereas when I would get on set, I just wanted to get lost. I loved turning my phone off when I got to set because I was like, nothing matters but work to me today. And this is my fun place, whether it was just chewing the fat with Chris Streams before you got there or we're shooting photos, like the whole day, I just felt a connection with everyone. And I don't feel like getting back for a bit in the business, I realized that there was no one new that I would want to come over to my house and have sex with me off camera.
Mm-hmm.
That says a lot.
Yeah, it's just, it's really interesting because, you know, at that time, it was like we could all enjoy hanging out together on sets. And I agree now, I think, because it's become such a, you know, corporate machine.
Yeah.
You know, and these younger girls, I mean, God bless them. You know, some of them are making crazy money with their OnlyFans and all this.
Yeah.
But that becomes all it is, you know, and it's like, so... Because I've met some and they're so focused on content. I don't think they're actually focused on having any fun. It's just I need content. I need content. It's like,
I wanted to live in the live moment while the live moment was happening and being present in that live moment. Because I know when I go home and I'm alone, I can fuck with all my content, right? I can tweet later. I can post this shit later. But right now I'm here. I also feel that, you know, the late 90s are probably... before the internet. So let's say 2005 and before, there were a lot more sexual beings in the industry really exploring themselves because it wasn't as big of a business then. And there weren't all of these different venues and ways to make money. I can remember getting in trouble with Mark Davis on set because they were taking too long to light the room. And we went off and secretly had sex on the location. And the director heard us and came in screaming because he was so worried about the pop shot. And I remember they separated us. Like, they were like, makeup artist is watching me. He has to stay over here with craft services. Like, we actually got in trouble. But that was the magic of being a young girl that had just come from Pennsylvania to get to California. This is what I was looking for, was like this kind of excitement.
Well, yeah, then you get stuck with Mark Davis, who looks like a male model. I mean, God, you know, tough life for you. Yeah, every girl just kicked him out of bed.
And I also remember, you know, falling in love on my first porn set. It was Ian Daniels. I later realized it wasn't that I fell in love at all. It was just, I had just had the best sex of my life for the longest amount of time, right? Because yeah. you talk about it in your book, endurance is a big thing that comes from your fitness lifestyle, that comes from your mind, being able to slow down, breathing is a big thing. But like, you don't get the onset endurance. And when I was working with Ian in that scene, we were shooting on film. So you had to shoot a lot longer. And also there was no additives, no Viagra, no injections, no nothing. So when the cameras weren't rolling, the female had a lot more responsibility because you wanted to keep your performer hard so he'd be ready to get back in the action. And now if you even stop for a second, the guy's just stroking it by himself and the girl's checking her phone.
Oh, well, I mean, it was even better. This was something recent, you know, because I don't know how it is in America, but over here now you just have this, oh, it's just an epidemic of the guys that are using the needles, right?
Okay. Yeah. We're having that problem here too, which really freaked me out.
Yeah. And so, you know, I'm the only guy that's all natural in the scene, right? You know, it's like, I get myself hard, but we're doing photos, right? And of course, you know, everybody's, you know, just chemically enhanced. So it's like,
they're so hard. It hurts looking at them.
Oh,
by
yeah,
the way,
yeah,
as a
yeah.
woman,
so,
it doesn't
so,
feel
so
good.
She just literally, she just grabs Dick and it's just holding it. And this is like a long time, you know, just like not stroking, just like hands on it, right? She puts yeah. her hands on mine and, you know, and after a while it's just going like, tick, tick, tick. And I'm like, you know, so I grab her hand, right?
Made this a little funny. Movement with
oh, yeah, I made a little movement, right? You know, then at first, like, hey, you got to do this. So, like, as I'm grabbing her hand, it moves. As soon as I let go of the hand, stops. And it's like, tick, tick. I'm like, sweetheart, like,
teamwork.
Dick 101 here, okay? Like, if you don't touch them, I go, no, it, you know, and I'm trying to, you know, explain to her.
You're trying
broken,
to say it delicately.
Broken English, right? I'm like, no injection. Normal dick, okay, right? Like, and like, you know, the, and I get it. Like, they're young, but I'm like, I can tell she's grown up in this, you know, new world where you
yeah.
know, these guys, dicks, they are just ready, and you just grab it. You don't have yeah. to do anything. It's just
right.
permanently hard. I'm like, that's not how normal dicks works. We are like, okay,
and I have heard that in where you're shooting, it's probably about 80 to 90% of the guys that are now doing the injections.
Oh yeah,
because somehow that's easier Crazy. To get than the pills, or is it that the pills don't work for them anymore?
I
know the pills have side effects, headaches, stomach aches. Guys have told me they've gotten ulcers from taking too many Viagra. You take Viagra 5 days a week, it's gonna fuck with your body.
I think over here, it's just, I don't know, actually. I mean, certainly they can get a hold of whatever they want. So it's not, they're choosing, I think they're choosing it because possibly a lot of the work here is harder.
It's
and
harder.
And they just
yeah.
can't.
Yeah,
they
I understand.
Can't, they just can't do it with their mind. Their mind is so checked out.
And yeah.
That's...
It's a little bit more. I was on set where one went bad. The performer injected himself. And then during the scene, we realized he had hit a vein because blood just started gushing out of his penis all over the floor. And it was so traumatic.
Oh, my
I
God.
I wasn't working with the guy, but China was. And it was on one of her first shoots. And I had already thought this should not be what she's doing right now. It was for Vivid. And I just remember this pool of blood on the floor and me thinking like, yeah, this is why guys shouldn't inject themselves. Like you're not a doctor. You're just going into the bathroom that has horrible lighting. They always run the sink, by the way. That's how I know they're injecting. They run the sink water forever. Nobody runs a sink for that long. And they do it so that you don't hear them going through their bag and like setting everything up. I know the drill by now, buddy.
Oh, well over here, it's totally, totally shameless.
Oh, they do it in front of people?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Oh, that would freak me out. I don't want to
oh,
see
yeah.
it.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. No, here's I you want a good story. I know you
yes.
do. Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Here's the best story. The best story. This was a couple of years ago. And we're shooting this you know, big group scene, right? And so, you know, they have the you know, here, you know, which you would consider to be like the kind of A-listers, right? And but they need more guys, so then they're scraping like you know all the local Czech guys, right? Because they're like, yeah. well, we need
extras.
Guys.
Right? We need more. We need more dicks, right? Yeah.
And then of course, you know, they tell everybody these infamous words. Okay, time to get ready, right? Which means everybody, you know, and you see this.
Inject.
This, yeah, the file of guys, they're waiting to go to the bathroom, right? So anyways, so they all do their thing, right? And, you know, suddenly they pop out, right?
The hard as a rock.
Oh, yeah, hard as a rock. I'm sitting there with my flaccid dick and I'm getting it hard. I'm like, hey, wait for me, guys. I can see you're all super excited, you know? At what? I have no idea. But anyways, so I get it together, right? And we're starting the photos, you know, it's like group blowjob photo, right? And you know, I'm just, you know, checking around, looking at everything. And then I see it and I go, oh my fucking God, in my brain, right? So have you ever, say, been taking some notes, right? You know, you got a pad of paper, yeah. Taking some notes, right?
Oh, yeah.
And then you're thinking, you're like, okay, you take it out. And then you're like, well, I'm going to come back to this later. And you just put the pen behind your ear.
You see, oh, my God. Going? One of the guys had the needle behind his ear.
Oh, yeah.
He just holding it there in case you want to inject some more.
No. Forgot it. Forgot it. So
on camera, so now you have to take out those photos. If you got to take those photos over.
Oh, the photos are probably somewhere. But
because at that point with a group blowjob shot, your heads aren't even.
And I'm just like shocking on. I'm like, and I'm just like pointing. I'm like, what is? And he's like, huh? And he literally grabs. He's like, ooh, like, you know, kind of.
And
stupid.
By the way,
like,
no lid on it because they're not going to be super clean about what they're in. Like, I've seen guys
reuse the needle.
That is where the industry has gone. That is so bizarre. But
I was like, oh my God. Now, like.
Now you've seen it all. That was
Here's the problem. Every time I have said that, there's something new. So I don't even say that anymore.
And you've been shooting sex scenes now for 20 years?
22 years.
Okay. Yeah. It's still going. But the book is the new endeavor. And you are also coaching, which doesn't mean that my listeners need to be in Prague to take part in this. Because I'm sure you're doing most of this coaching right now over Zoom, right?
Yeah. No, I work exclusively over Zoom.
And do you see the progress that they're making and the conversations that you're having, especially now the guys are out now having sex again?
Oh yeah. Oh no, my clients love me. We've done a lot of work just with everything with them, you know, like teaching them different mental techniques, penis exercises, diet, go into different what I call dirty biohacks to get you through whatever is causing you to have premature ejaculation. I have a supplement regime for them because there's a whole bunch of different supplements that I take and that can help you with premature ejaculation. Then there's maneuvers of consciousness, different exercises that I have to retrain your neurology. And these are all things that I just learned over the years, because for me, the way I always approached it was, okay, you know, I want to be the best, right? And how you practice is how you play. It's just like, you love football, right? Imagine Tom Brady if he never showed up to practice. He didn't do any preseason games. Imagine he just sat on the bench for 16 games, and then come the Super Bowl, he's like, hey, coach, I'm ready. Put me in. How do you think that's going to go?
It doesn't work that way.
And one thing I explain to a lot of my clients is I'll ask them, you know, especially if they're struggling with premature ejaculation, I say, well, when you jerk off, how long does it take you? And they're like, oh, like a minute, right?
Last longer.
Mm-hmm. I'm like, you have just trained your dick to fire off in 1 minute.
Yep.
It hits them there. I'm like, because you've laid down the myelin sheath of neurology that say, hey, you know what? In 1 minute, I come, and you've just done it over and over and over.
And that
habit is just ingrained in the neurology, because, you know, any skill that we do, you know, like take, for example, Kobe, he used to shoot, what was it, like 20,000 baskets in a practice or something, right? You know, if anybody that's ever driven a manual transmission, you know, the first time you do it, you're trying to get your feet and your hands and everything to coordinate at the same time. You do it for years, constantly, all the time. And that's the thing. You don't think about it. It becomes an automatic response from your body. Same thing with lasting. It becomes an automated response of your body. It's like, oh, wait, yeah, my body doesn't, like, no, I'm not allowed to come until I'm at 30 minutes. And your body's right.
One of the habits from Seth that has carried over into my personal life, and it's always funny when it comes up the first time, is I always ask the guy, like, what's your favorite position? And right away, you know, they tell me, and I'm like, okay, we'll do that last. And you know, that's me from Seth, baby, because I always would ask my performer, what's your favorite? Because that is what we want to save for last, because why do I want to put you? And so I tell my guy friends, like, you should do what you're least interested in first when you're with a new girl, because you can still make it happen. But like, if you know you're going to come from doggy, then you need to save that until you put some work in. Like, you can't just go doggy right away because you know it's not going to last. So when I ask the guy that the first time, then after, it's always a funny ongoing joke. You're like, of course, I'm the first girl that's asked him, like, what's your favorite position? And then didn't let them do it first. But like, I'm saving you, man. I'm giving you some extra time to get some work in, because I don't want like a minute man. You know what I'm saying? Like, this is important. I'm thinking, if I can have the Eric Everhart experience in my personal life without having to just go back and watch the endless hours we've had on DVD or on the internet, it would be great. So I'm just trying to do the work myself. That is my tip. And my tip for all of my listeners is to go out there. I'll be posting about it so you can easily get your hands on this amazing book, Unleash Your Sexual Superpowers, A Porn Star's Guide to Sexual Mastery. There is no time better than right now than to get your A game going, because, you know, the world has not yet opened up all over the U.S. So New York, everything is still pretty much closed. So like, people are still like not out doing things. So this is the time to learn and study so that when you are back out there, you want 5 stars on that dating app. You want every girl to be rating you. And just like I would rate you, one of my greatest friends, Eric. You can follow him on Instagram at Eric Everhart Photos, other social media, or anywhere where listeners can follow you, Eric.
Yeah. My main Instagram is Eric Everhart Official. They can find me there. Then also they can go to my website, which is www.ericeverhart.com, and they can download for free 3 free chapters of my book. So
that's cool.
Yeah.
A little teaser.
Email address, they get the first 3 chapters. And I think chapter 3 alone on pussy eating would change anybody's life.
Because 9 out of 10 guys suck at it. Just saying.
Yeah.
Just saying. 9 out of 10 guys suck at it. I will say a lot of the girls in the business were, unless they were girls that did girl only, they weren't great at it either, because they just did it to get it over with. Girl only girls, though, those are the ones you want to work with when you want the good pussy eating. There's no doubt about that. Eric, thank you so much for joining us today. I look forward to all of my listeners getting involved with your book. I am hoping to meet you some new clients, because I know there's some men out there that need some coaching.
Well, I'm ready to do it. So let's make sure that the year 2021, everybody is ready, primed, taught, and, you know, ready to blow people's minds as soon as the COVID lockdowns are done.
And I look forward to visiting you again, and more sex in our future, hopefully.
Yes, 100%.
I don't get to say that to many of my guests. Have a great day. Love you. Now, that was a fun conversation. It is incredible to hear Eric's stories. I got the honor to get a PDF of his book before it was released. So, you know, I got a chance to pre-read it, and I want you all to go out and order it. You can get it on Amazon. Don't forget to give him a follow on Twitter at Eric_Everhart. And I don't have to spell it, because there was such a great story about the E-R-I-K. It had to be with a K. You know, he looks Nordic. The whole thing, the Everhart, because he's always hard, which is factual. On Instagram, you can follow him at Eric Everhart Official. I hope you enjoyed this interview today as much as I did. Don't forget to subscribe to my podcast. No Ask Lisa Ann this week, but we got to ask Eric so much. I feel completely fulfilled. I hope you do as well. I am still, as always, collecting questions in my email, asklisaann@gmail.com. Don't forget, you could find this podcast very easily on the SiriusXM app,
Apple Podcasts, and don't forget to subscribe and rate the podcast. Maybe a review? I don't know. In the meantime, I'll be reading more Ask Lisa Ann questions to bring to you, and you will be reading Eric Everhart's book. Thanks for joining me for another episode of the Lisa Ann Experience.